हरे राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन पल्लव गिरिपद धारी गोपी जन पल्लव गिरिपद धारी यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन जमुना क्षीरापन चारी जमुना क्षीरापन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन पल्लव गिरिपद धारी गोपी जन पल्लव गिरिपद धारी यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना क्षीरापन चारी यमुना क्षीरापन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी
विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य स्तोत्र सुत श्री श्रीमद एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय। इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। Jayom Vishnupad Paramhansa Paripracaka Charasha Astotra Sutta Sri Srimad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananti Koti Vaishnav Brinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Sham Kund Radha Kund Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Brindavan Dham Ki Jai Sri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Sri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Sri Mathura Dham Ki Jai Sri Dwarka Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mayi Ki Jai Yamuna Mayi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Ki Jai Samabeda Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Brahma Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Brahmano Uvacha Ityete Guya Sandesha Yadu Deva Maya Hrita
Yadu Deva Maya Hrita
Vimrishya Kartum Yachchatra
Vimrishya Kartum Yachchatra
Kriyatam Tad Anantaram Brahmana uvacha
Brahmana uvacha
Ityete guya sandesha
Ityete guya sandesha
Yadu deva maya hrita
Yadu deva maya hrita
Vimrishya kartum yachchatra Kriyatam tad anantaram Brahmana uvacha
Brahmana uvacha
Ityete guya sandesha
Ityete guya sandesha
Yadu deva maya hrita Vimrishya kartum yachchatra Kriyatam tad anantaram
Brahmana uvacha
Brahmana uvacha
Ityete guya sandesha
Ityete guya sandesha
Janudeva mahataha
Janudeva mahataha
Vimrishya kartum yachchatra
Vimrishya kartum yachchatra
Tantra
ladies. The Brahman said, iti, thus, ete, these, guya, confidential, sandesha, messages, yadu deva, O Lord of the Yadus, maya, by me, ahrita, brought Vimrishya, considering Karatum to be done, yat, what, cha, and atra, in this manner, Kriyatam, please do, tat, that, Anantaram, immediately following. Translation. The Brahman said, this is the confidential message I have brought with me, O Lord of the Yadus. Please consider what must be done in these circumstances. And do it at once. Purport. When the Brahman arrived, he broke the seal of a confidential letter written in the privacy of Rukmini's quarters and meant only for Lord Krishna. By using the term Guya Sandesha, the trustworthy Brahman personally selected by Rukmini here affirms that he has not violated the confidentiality of this message. Only Lord Krishna has heard it. Since the marriage of Rukmini was fast approaching, Sri Krishna would have to act immediately. The term Yadudeva indicates that Lord Krishna, as the Lord of the all-powerful Yadu dynasty, should make his decision and then mobilize his followers if necessary. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 10th canto, 52nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Rukmini's Message to Lord Krishna.
Om Agyantimidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurum Militanjena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yudhapadakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavanscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam, Savadutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padam, Sahagana Lalita, Sri Vishakanvitam Cha, He Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostate, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha, Patithanam Bhavanibhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
The Brahman said, "This is the confidential message I have brought with me, O Lord of the Yadus. Please consider what must be done in these circumstances and do it at once." We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 52, entitled Rukmini's Message to Krishna, Text 44. In the previous chapter, Lord Krishna is described to have delivered Muchakunda, a great devotee who was oversleeping. And Krishna had a very special messenger wake him up of the name Kalyavana. At the same time as liberating Kalyavana, Jarasandha, with 23 Akshohini divisions of soldiers, attacked Mathura. So Krishna, by his own sweet will, created a fort in the middle of the ocean that he called Dwarka. And while all of his relatives, the entire Yadu dynasty, went to sleep at night in Mathura, they were without any waking up even. They were moved to Dwarka, and they woke up in beautiful palaces. Meanwhile, when Jarasandha attacked, Krishna became Ranchor. He ran away. We were describing in our previous class when Kalyavana attacked Krishna. And Kalyavana was as powerful as any person in the material existence could be. He had such powers. He was really all the yogic siddhis he had mastered, and he was a warrior. Krishna walked in front of him, was challenged to fight, and Krishna didn't even look at Kalyan. He just walked by him. Which is really an insult. Somebody of that stature, who was a king, who came with millions of soldiers to fight, and Krishna didn't even look at him. Just turned his back and walked. Kalyavana insulted Krishna with such harsh words, calling him a coward. And Krishna just kept walking. And he went to grab Krishna because he was really angry. He was totally insulted. It's an insult when you say something bad to someone, but it's a worst insult when you just turn your back and walk away. At least to a kshatriya like this. It's not even, if you say something bad, at least you're recognizing that the person is there. But Krishna wouldn't even do that. And this person was extremely powerful. He went to grab Krishna, and he was less than an inch away, but he couldn't touch him. So he walked faster, and Krishna was always just that much in front of him. And he walked faster, and soon Kalyavana was running with his full speed, which is unimaginable to us. And Krishna was just walking with the same pace as he was before. Just like a leisurely walk. And it was always the same amount distance. He couldn't touch him. And this went on for miles and miles. And Krishna kept walking and he was kept insulting and running and trying. Finally, Krishna climbed a mountain and he climbed the mountain with Krishna. Krishna went into a cave. He went into the cave. The cave was really dark. And there was someone sleeping on the floor. Now this is a remote cave in a remote jungle on a very high mountain. So obviously, you know, there's nobody else in the cave. So this was really an insult that not only Krishna's completely ignoring me, neglecting me, but I'm challenging him to fight and he goes to sleep. I was extremely angry. And with all of his force, he kicked the sleeping body. And the sleeping body wasn't Krishna. It was Muchakunda. And he woke up. He looked around to see who was disturbing his sleep. And he saw Kalyavana. And just by his glance, the fire element in Kalyavana's body became so out of control that he suddenly became ashes. There was a flame and an ash. That was it. Muchakunda just woke up, so he really didn't know what was going on. And it's not like he intentionally burned him. He got a vow, he got a benediction from demigods because he stayed up for a long time to assist the demigods in fighting a war as their general. And when finally Kartikeya appeared as the son of Shiva, the deva said, "Now, we don't require your service, but please know you've been fighting so long for us, your whole family, everyone, by the power of time, they're all gone. But we'll give you any benediction you like." He said, "I'm tired. Just let me sleep." And to assure that the demigods themselves wouldn't wake him up to do more fighting, he said, "If anyone wakes me, they will burn into ashes by my glance." So he happened to glance, and by the power of this boon, Kalyavana was liberated. Because Krishna was standing in the darkness watching. And Muchakunda saw Krishna and understood him to be the Supreme Lord and surrender his heart to him. And Krishna offered him any benediction. He only wanted to remember Krishna and serve Krishna in any situation. He wanted nothing else. He saw from the highest planet in this world down to the lowest what the real value of anything is. He saw that his own loved ones, his wife, his children, his grandchildren, everyone perished in time in what appeared to him like a moment. Even though they lived out their lives fully, because he was seeing from another perspective, the demigod's perspective, it was like a moment. Why cling to things that are going to be lost so soon? The body, all the identities we hold with this body that we try to defend, that we try to develop, and all the things and people that are in connection to this body. What was hundreds of years by his family's time, he just saw it as something very quickly. Because when he fought for the demigods, he went into the demigods' time zone. So why should I ask for anything that's just going to perish so quickly? And he also saw from the demigods' perspective, who have extremely long lives in relation to human existence, and who have such power and such beauty. Demigods never grow old. They're youthful, they're powerful, until the end of their karmic term, and then they just go on to another life. There's no hospices in the heavenly planets. So it's quite a life, and they have so much luxury and so much. Most of them all have yogic powers, siddhis, beyond what anybody could attain in this world. And the beauty of their loved ones. It's very special. But he saw, even having all that, the demigods were still in so much fear. That's why they called on him. He was working with them. He saw from an insider's perspective. Just like people in this world, they're very attracted by wealthy people and famous people, and we just have some sort of perception of what life must be like for them. And it appears that way. But if you actually go on the inside and get to know such people, they have the same old struggles as everybody else, and usually even more. The same vulnerabilities, the same betrayals, the same physical pains, and they're all getting old the same way. So what is the dream? For Muchakunda, he had an insider's view of the demigods. Yes, while people are doing so many yajnas and worshipping the devas for promotion to their planets, he was there, and he saw. They're afraid like all of us. And what is all fear based on? Misconception. The misconception that I'm this body. And what is the source of this misconception? Something so simple. Forgetful of who we really are. When we forget who we really are, we have this misconception that I'm this body and mind. And from that, endless misconceptions develop. janasyamohoyamahamameti. What is, who am I and what is mine? And in these misconceptions, there are so many complications, so many implications, so many frustrations. Because that's the way material nature has been created. And everyone wants it to be different for them. Everyone wants creation to be tailor-made just for me. So this is not going to happen. But the reality is, creation has been tailor-made for every one of us. But in this way. Because everything is temporary. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Abrama bhuvana loka punar avatunorjana mamupetitu kontya punar janmanavidyate. From the highest planet of Brahma down to the lowest, everything's temporary. And it's a very relative conception, what is a long time and what isn't a long time. Because we all see time according to our particular karma and the particular consciousness that we're in, which is very much determined by the particular species of life we're in. A whole lifetime of a human being is only a few days for a demigod. Just yesterday I came from Jagannath Puri. There was a meeting, the Indian Bureau, and it was in a hotel. And they gave all the people in the meeting rooms in this hotel. And it was really a nice hotel. So I went into the room of my room. I had my own room. My own toilet and everything. It was very nice. But it was all nice wood carvings, and it was very nice curtains, all these high-tech lighting systems. And I was thinking, this is very nice to look at, but to live in, it's not my style. But one of the things about this room is it had a balcony from the third floor overlooking the sea. This is the sea that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would bathe in every day. Should I tell a story? So from the balcony, there's, you know, the air conditioning system. Nothing reaches there. So I really thought, this is nice. It's just out on the, sleeping on the floor with the sea. And this, and in Puri, the sea is quite enthusiastic. So the waves are large and the sound is very purifying to the ears and the mind and the heart. Like that. Your clapping sounded more like the sea than my imitation. So I decided I'm just going to sleep on the balcony. Because there's, the world is created in such a way. While I was laying out there, I was thinking that according to one's nature, there's different things we enjoy. For many people, sleeping in the luxurious room that I just left for the balcony, that's enjoyment. But for me, sleeping on the ground near the ocean is much better enjoyment. So what's the difference? We're all just trying to enjoy. But material nature, such a thing, that things don't always go your way. Because right in on top of my balcony, not my balcony, but the balcony I was offered to sleep on, there was extremely large, bright halogen lamp that was meant to light up the sea and the beach. It was shining out there. And it's right over the balcony. So the balcony's, it's coming in and it's bright. So I was thinking I could close my eyes, no problem. But at night in Puri, a bright light is an extremely popular, you know, because Puri's a tourist resort. So I found that one of the greatest tourist sites for insects was that light. There were countless insects, literally. I can't even estimate. They were. It looked like millions. Maybe it was hundreds of thousands. Maybe it was thousands. But it was a cloud, a swarm of insects flying. And they weren't just right at the light. They were all around the light. And they filled the balcony. So I was one of the insects, as far as spirit souls on the balcony. And I was looking up, and it was really incredible. Because I flew to Bhuvaneshwar from Bombay, and so many air traffic control systems and airplanes. You're not supposed to put any cell phones on. They have their rules because it could disturb the air traffic control systems. Yes? But the insects, there's millions in just maybe a few meters of space. And they're flying really fast, really enthusiastically. And I was looking up, and I did not see any two insects crash into each other. How do they do that? It's actually incredible. It's supernatural. It's a common thing we see every day, but it's unbelievable. In the space between myself and Gauranga Prabhu, there's probably millions of insects. And they're all flying really fast. And they're all going in all kinds of different formations. And no two even touched each other. How do they do that? It's not like some choreographed practice. They don't have any radar signals. It's just a power that God has given these insects. So while I was appreciating their aerodynamic empowerment, I was also not sleeping very well because they were all over the place. So I had a little mosquito net. But they have another mystic power. They get inside mosquito nets. So here I was, making my plans to enjoy in the ocean. And I woke up in the morning, and on the floor, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of dead insects. And I realized that they didn't burn in the light. It was their lifespan. What's 100 years for us is passed as one life for them. And according to their perspective, according to the conscious condition of their mind and senses, that one night seems to them as long as our 100 years. Because they're having girlfriends and boyfriends. Otherwise, the next night, there's not going to be the same situation. And during that night, they're probably having children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And they're getting old, and their wings are getting kind of arthritis. And and then by the time of sunrise, they're gone. So this was Muchukunda's realization. That whatever situation we are in this world, everything is so limited by time. And the older you get, the faster time seems to move. When you're a little child in school waiting for summer vacation, it seems forever. But when you start getting old, like decades pass in the same amount of time as little child waiting for Christmas or whatever they wait for. Diwali. So Muchukunda saw it all from a very, very unique perspective. So the only benediction he wanted from Krishna was, let me serve you with love in every situation. That's all. Let me please you. And Krishna climbed the mountain as Jarasandha. He came down from the mountain, and there was Jarasandha with his armies. And he challenged Krishna to fight. Now, Kalyavana was as powerful as anyone could be, and Krishna just walked away. For Jarasandha, Krishna ran really fast. He ran away. And Jarasandha was chasing after him on his chariots with elephants and foot soldiers, and they were chasing and chasing mile after mile after mile, and Krishna was running faster and faster along with Balaram, and he was going faster and faster. They couldn't catch him, and Krishna climbed a mountain, and they went over the mountain with him, and they couldn't find Krishna. And the Bhagavatam describes Krishna and Balaram were exhausted. They were running so fast. Now, how is God exhausted? God's not exhausted. But because he's the absolute truth and he's Swarat, he's completely independent, if he wants to be exhausted, there is no power in creation that can stop him from being exhausted. So his exhaustion is lila. It is pastime to attract our hearts and to also make everything exciting. It's not like our exhaustion. Our exhaustion is because of our limitation. But Krishna's exhaustion is only to increase the sweetness of his pastimes. It's fully under his control. So Jarasandha, Krishna ran. Kalyavana, Krishna walked. And neither could catch him. And Yashoda Mai, she's just a gopi mother. She tied up Krishna with a rope. And that rope is her love. Bhaktya Tvananya Yashakyam Aham Evam Vidurajana. Krishna tells in Gita, it's only by love and devotion that I can be known. Not by our austerities, not by our cultivation of knowledge, not by our fame or accomplishments. It's only by love and devotion. It's only by having a simple heart it simply wants to please Krishna. Krishna makes himself known by his grace. There's no other way. We can know different aspects of the universe, and we can know different aspects of spiritual realization, and we can attain powers, and we can attain peace. But to know God is only possible through a humble heart of love and devotion. So Krishna could not be caught. And Jarasandha lit the whole mountain on fire to burn Krishna. Because he was, even though Krishna revealed so many things to him, he just couldn't understand. It's really a very, very profound lesson. That's the story of human history. We see according to our particular state of consciousness. Jarasandha had an envious, arrogant heart. Therefore, even though Krishna defeated him 17 times and let him go with humiliation, still, Jarasandha was thinking, I will defeat Krishna. And because he did not have a service attitude, even though he was seeing God, he was seeing God face to face again and again and again, 17 times and more. In fact, he was a distant relative of Krishna. His daughters were married to Krishna's uncle, Kamsa. But unless Krishna reveals himself, even if he stands before, we can't recognize. It is said that a saintly person is like a mirror, and they reflect our own consciousness. And saintly people are simply representing Krishna or God. So because he was such an envious, arrogant person, he just saw Krishna as an envious, arrogant person. And even though Krishna was showing him his supreme powers, he couldn't understand or appreciate them. The same thing that even if we just hear about, we fall in love with Krishna. He was seeing. And it was increasing his hatred for Krishna. What is the difference? Krishna reveals himself, yayatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamya, according to our consciousness, according to how we approach. So he was thinking Krishna is afraid of him. Now, any logical person would think, if Krishna just defeated him effortlessly 17 times, why would he be afraid of him? Does that make sense? See, you're all such logical people. Jarasandha was a very logical person. But when you have attachments in your heart, even if you're so logical, you become illogical when it comes to the really important things in life. That's why devotees, even though we understand what is Vaishnava Aparad, we understand what is Prabhupada's desire, still we sometimes do so foolish things to each other because even though we know everything, because there's some attachment or there's some arrogance or there's some fear or envy or whatever it is, we act totally illogical to everything we know. That's the nature of attachment. whether it be lust, anger, envy, arrogance, greed, or illusion. These are the six primary anartas or attachments. And in this material world, if we come under the influence of any of them, we become bewildered. And we just don't see things as they are anymore. We just see everything completely colored in that way. Srila Prabhupada gave the example, if you wear yellow-colored glasses, everything looks yellow, right? If someone like puts yellow-colored glasses on you, or when you're sleeping and you wake up and you don't know you're wearing glasses, you think, everything's become yellow. Amazing, incredible. But then if you take them off and put green-colored glasses, everything looks green. So according to our consciousness, we're seeing through that state of mind. So Jarasandha decided to kill God because he didn't recognize he's God, even though he actually knew he was God. It was a bewilderment. So he and his armies, they worked really hard, and they got so much wood that they lit the entire mountain on fire. It was a gigantic mountain. And it was blazing. Can you imagine a mountain on fire? Nobody could survive. Nothing could survive. And Krishna and Balaram were on the mountain, and they were seeing the fire, and they were smiling. And without anybody seeing them, they jumped from the top of the mountain. Big mountain. And they jumped on the ground and then they just walked and went to Dwarka because Krishna knew that there was an urgent message that was about to come. So Jarasandha, he was so happy. There was no doubt in his mind, Krishna and Balaram finally were defeated and killed. So he was boasting, I killed Krishna and his brother Balaram. And he was so satisfied. He went back to Magadha, his kingdom, to celebrate. And meanwhile, Krishna, and he, who was happy to be called Ranchor, which means one who runs away when they're challenged. Now, the word Ranchor, because Krishna did it, now it's a great glorification. Yes? But previous to that, that word, Ranchor, was such an insult. The ultimate insult to a Kshatriya. It means one who is challenged and runs away. It's a coward. Ranchor. But because Krishna did it, not out of fear, but as his pastime to attract our hearts. It's one of his favorite names. And now so many millions of people, they give their children the name Ranchor Das, the servant of Ranchor. Yes? And there's a temple in Gujarat, in Dakor, is that the name? Ranchor. And millions of people come to worship Ranchor. Now we're getting closer to today's verse. Meanwhile, in Vidarbha, there's a king named Bhishmaka. And he has, I think, four sons and a daughter. His eldest son is Rukmi. And his daughter is named Rukmini. And she is an expansion of the goddess of fortune herself. She's Krishna's eternal consort from the spiritual world who incarnated in this world. But at the same time, she has... In order for her love and Krishna's love for each other to have this deep, intimate experience of spiritual pastime, she was put in an incredible situation. And we can describe many lessons that apply to us by how Krishna or his devotees are put in situations. You see, in this world, things don't always go our way. And when things don't go our way and we try our very, very best and still it's not enough, then we have to humble ourselves and take shelter of the higher power of God's grace, Krishna's grace. Draupadi, when she was being stripped by Dushasana in a great assembly, his arms were like 1,000 elephants in strength, and she was just a simple lady. She tried her hardest by her strength to protect herself, but it was impossible. She turned to her husbands, but they could do nothing. She turned to Bhishma and Drona and Dhritarashtra, the greatest warriors on the earth. They could do nothing. By her words, by her intelligence, by her connections, by her own strength, nothing could help her. It was totally hopeless. It was only in that state that with a fully surrendered heart she lifted her arms into the air and cried Krishna's names. Hey Krishna, hey Govinda, I'm yours. Krishna, I'm yours. And Krishna inconceivably came to protect her. So Rukmini, she's a young girl living in a royal palace. And because her father was a very pious, dharmic king, Bhishmaka, so many saintly people, including Narada Muni, would come to visit. And whenever they would come and visit, they would talk about Krishna. And she was just a little girl listening. And just by hearing about Krishna's qualities, about Krishna's relations with his devotees, about Krishna's beauty, she totally fell in love with Krishna. Now, what is that love? It's not like falling in love in this world. Because falling in love in this world is very much based in the mind and senses. But this type of love, which is accessible and available to everyone, is what Rukmini experienced. When we hear about Krishna, it awakens the original love of the soul. The Atma is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. And what is that Ananda? That Ananda in its highest perfect state is its unmotivated, unconditional love for God, for Krishna. And to experience the infinite love that Krishna has for all of us. That is Ananda. It's the Ananda of prema, of the sweetest form of love, the love of the soul. And that love is within all of us. Srila Prabhupada spoke on one beautiful record album in 1966. His explanation of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he said, Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind. It is the original natural energy of every living being. It's who we are, who we have always been, and who we will always be. But we forgot. We forgot, and in that initial forgetfulness, we become implicated in endless distractions, trying to find the ecstasy of the soul's love for God through so many people and so many things, oftentimes on a very selfish level. And every time we try to solve the problem of some vacancy in our heart, we create more problems. Prahlad Maharaj said like that. Without Krishna consciousness, without understanding the spiritual nature of the soul, the solutions to the problems in material life create more complicated problems than the original problem, even if it solves the problem. Hare Krishna. So this is where broad vision is required for real spiritual life. Because we have problems. And sometimes we get immediate solutions to problems, but we create a bigger, more difficult problem that comes from our solution. So the origin, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada told our Prabhupada, the first time they met in Calcutta in 1922, the only real problem is forgetfulness of our eternal relationship with God, lack of Krishna consciousness. So, Rukmini is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. Our Acharya's quote from the Skanda Purana. Who was Rukmini in Dwarka was the same person who was Srimati Radharani in Vrindavan. And it's quoted from another Purana that the gopis of Vrindavan became the queens in Dwarka, expansions of. So she's in such an exalted position. So we may be thinking, I'm such a good devotee, why is all these problems happening to me? But how many of us are as good as Rukmini? And yet so many problems happening to her. This was the most difficult crisis. She just, by hearing about Krishna, her love for him, her original, eternal love for him, awakened. And that's what could happen to each and every one of us. Nasta praisya padreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya. Bhagavati uttamo sloke. Bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. By regularly hearing the pastimes of Krishna and his incarnations and his devotees from Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural love of our heart awakens. Srinbhatam sukata Krishna punjasravana kirtana. When we're eager to hear about Krishna, when we develop a taste for hearing about Krishna, that eagerness, that taste, how we approach, if we're hearing about Krishna just to increase our knowledge so that we can prove ourselves to be better than others, then after many, many births, you'll get some understanding of Krishna. But immediately you'll just get some knowledge and feel yourself better than others. But if you actually hear about Krishna in the proper spirit, just that sound vibration, it reminds the soul of its true nature. It awakens. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chandra Bole. It awakens us. Saravaram Kirtanam Vishnu.
Hearing and chanting the names and glories of the Lord is the most powerful method because it directly awakens the very essence of our existence, our soul.
And as the soul is awakened, it removes all the sorrows, frustrations, and confusions of this world. So she fell in love with Krishna. And her love was not a selfish love. It was a selfless love. She considered, just by hearing, she didn't have any books about Krishna in those days, because the books were written after Krishna left. She would just overhear. And it's not the saints and sages were giving her special private dharmic, Bhagavad Dharma classes. She just overheard them talking. It's similar to the Brahmins' wives in Vrindavan. Nobody was specifically giving them lectures about Krishna. They would just go to the market to buy flowers for their puja and to buy some fruits and vegetables. And Brijavasis would come to the market to sell their fruits and vegetables and grains. And all they could talk about was Krishna. And as they're buying things, and they didn't buy things with money, they bartered, you know, and because there was no money in those days. As they were just doing their negotiations in the market, they would just hear the ladies. They weren't preaching. They were just talking to each other about Krishna. And the Brahmins' wives just overheard it. But because they had such humble and non-duplicitous hearts, they fell in love with Krishna totally. They never saw him. They just heard about him. And it was kind of like gossip. But nice gossip. It was just talk. Village talk. Villagers talking. Jive Pipa Swami Tamate Deva Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. This was the nature of gopis. Their tongues were always tasting the sweetness of the names and pastimes of Govinda, Damodar, Madhava. And just by coming in contact with such lovers of God, they had complete transformation. And all they performed their duties to their families and their household and everything else. Their minds were completely fixed in longing to serve Krishna and please Krishna. And finally they got the opportunity to bring prasad to Krishna. And they wanted to stay with Krishna. And Krishna told them, no, no, no. I have accepted you. You have accepted me. I'm enjoying the prasad that you took. Now you go back home. So did they ever see Krishna again? There's not much record of that with their eyes. But just knowing that Krishna was pleased with their service was the absolute, complete intimacy of the fulfillment of their desires to be with Krishna. Because love of God is beyond all geographical boundaries. Krishna is within our hearts. That love within our hearts is where Krishna is going to embrace us. And love and separation is oftentimes the deepest connection with Krishna within us. So similarly, Rukmini, just by hearing sages and rishis and yogis talking about the beauty and qualities and pastimes and relationships of Krishna, she sharanagati. She surrendered her heart to Krishna. I'm yours for your pleasure. My body belongs to you, Krishna. My mind belongs to you. My soul belongs to you. I just want to please you. And she expressed to her relatives, I want to marry Krishna.
And please understand, she's a princess living in royalty that we cannot even imagine in the world today because it doesn't exist. You know, the Queen of England may have some royalty, but it's mostly rubber stamp kind of royalty. And she has her palace and everything, but, you know, it's what kind of palace? The palace of Bhishmaka is something extraordinarily elegant. And they had such culture and such etiquette. And she's coming from that. So she expresses, and her father, Bhishmaka, really wanted her to marry Krishna. But the eldest son, Rukmi, he hated Krishna. He was envious of Krishna. And people like to associate with people who are like them sometimes. So Rukmi was envious of Krishna. He was envious of his younger sister's love for Krishna. He was envious when he would hear, because he was living in the same palace as his sister. So obviously Rukmi would also hear Narada Muni and the saints and sages and yogis talk about Krishna. She fell in love with Krishna, and as he was hearing the same stories, he was becoming more and more envious of Krishna. Because he wanted to be beautiful. So when he hears about Krishna's beauty, no! He's a rascal, he's a demon. He had to discredit him in his mind. Because he wanted to be the one who was beautiful. And he was so proud of his qualities. And he wanted people so much to recognize his qualities. When he would hear about Krishna's qualities, you either have to surrender, or you have to just close your ears and pretend you didn't hear it, or you become really envious because you can't compete. And envy blinds us so much. Instead of thinking, he's God, I can't compete. When you become envious, you don't see him as God anymore. You really see him the way your mind wants to see him. So he became best friends with the most envious person on earth, Shishupal. Shishupal really was envious of Krishna. He was the personification of envy. He's Krishna's cousin. When he was born, the first things that came out of his mouth, first words, right? Like, so many mothers here. And mothers hear according to their love. And they see according to their love. That's the nature of love. It creates a reality around us, the nature of our love. So almost every mother tells me the first word out of our child's mouth was Prabhupada. Or Gopal. And they say, you see, he's saying Gopal. The mother's hearing Gopal. And I'm hearing... The little baby's going... And she's saying, you hear? He's saying Gopal. Of course. It's not my position to... enter into these intimate pastimes of love between a mother and a child. They come to my room, little born babies, just born. The baby goes, And the mother said, he just said Prabhupada. I said, okay. I said, well, congratulations. You know. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. You can only see Krishna when you have eyes of love, so you can only hear what your child's saying if you have ears anointed with the ornaments of love. Something like that. So, Shishupal, the first things he said when he was a baby, first words, was harsh, obscene blasphemies of Krishna. And it just got worse and worse and worse. He hated Krishna. He was envious of Krishna. Whenever he would hear that Krishna did good things, he would always have some philosophical explanation, quoting shastras, quoting paramparas, quoting everything to prove that what you think is wrong, this is actually the truth. Krishna's terrible. And the more Krishna did good things, the more envious he became. It's the nature of the world. It's not he was making things up for political reasons. He was actually feeling it. That's how strong Maya is, how she covers us over. And he was absolutely convinced that he was right. That's how he was covered over. That's the nature of envy. And please understand, Shishupal was not just, you know, he wasn't just some person who was, you know, smoking ganja and in some western city a few years ago. He was a king himself. He was a prince. He was coming from a royal family. He had the highest possible education. But that, you see, that was the problem. Because he actually did have certain qualifications, and he was proud of them. He was envious of someone else who had better. So Rukmi and Shishupal became the best of friends. And they had such a common link, their hatred and envy of Krishna. So here, Rukmi finds out his sister wants to marry Krishna. Oh, this is the ultimate insult. He decides she must marry Shishupal. And because he's the eldest son, and he's the prince, and he's a grown man, and he's taking care of the armies for his father and everything else, poor father, what can he say? Who's almost like Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, just, it was so difficult to say no to his son. Rukmi just took control. And she said, my sister is going to marry Shishupal. I vow to this. So the father just stood aside. And then Rukmini finds out. She gives her heart with love to Krishna. And she's already arranged to marry the person on earth who hates Krishna more than anyone. Who's constantly envious and speaking the worst things about Krishna and believing they're true and trying to convince others that they're true. That's serious. Because in those days it wasn't like, okay, I'll marry him, but then somehow or other I'll get a divorce. Wasn't like that in those days. When you marry someone, the two of you are together till death. That was tradition. So she's going to have to marry and live for the rest of his life with Shishupal. And her love was so deep and so pure. She's Krishna's consort. Please understand the dynamics of this. This is non-different, the feeling of Sita being willing to marry Ravana. There's no difference. This is in many ways even a deeper tragedy. Sita was kidnapped by Ravana, who was a great king, and he said, "You marry me." And she was just weeping 24 hours a day in separation of Ram. "I will never touch you." And Shishupal and Ravana, they were actually the same person. Yes? Jai and Vijay, they made a mistake with the four Kumaras, and by the will of Vishnu, they came to the earth for three incarnations as enemies of God. First was Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Second was Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Third was Dantavakra and Shishupal. So just as Ravana wanted to marry Sita in his next incarnation as Shishupal, he wanted to marry Rukmini. But the difference is, Sita didn't have a brother who agreed. So this is even more complicated. So Shishupal was totally infatuated with a materialistic conception of love for Rukmini. He totally gave his mind and his senses and his heart to Rukmini with the desire to selfishly enjoy her, just like Ravana with Sita. So Shishupal was absolutely determined to marry Rukmini. Rukmi was absolutely determined that it would happen. The king went along with it because he couldn't do anything. And poor Rukmini. And they wanted the marriage to be immediately. So all the arrangements are being made. The marriage is going to be the next day. Shishupal has invited his friends. Would you like to know just a few of the guests that came to that marriage? Jarasandha. With his armies. Dantavakra. With his armies. Vidurata. With his armies. Salva. With his armies. They were all assembled. And all of them knew that Rukmini loves Krishna. So Krishna might come to try to upset things. So they all strategically planned what they're going to do if Krishna shows up. They had so many fortified phalanxes to protect Rukmini. And Rukmini, she's a princess, and she knows how things are working. She was in total desperation. And she wrote a letter to Krishna. Now, Krishna's in Dwarka. Vidarbha's in Maharashtra, yes? It's close to where we are. Now, how do you get a message to Krishna? Because Dwarka, you have to cross part of the ocean to get to it. And there was no airplanes in those days. Even today, I don't think there's an airport in Dwarka, but to speak of. <laughs> very difficult situation. It was hopeless. It's going to happen the next morning. So she writes a letter, and she understood somebody has to get there. Somebody has to cross a large portion of the ocean, and then somebody has to get through all the security of Dwarka into Krishna's palace to personally, intimately, confidentially deliver a message that no one else should hear. So who could do that? Rukmini knew. Only a devotee. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Nama. Krishna loves the cows. And he loves the Brahmins. Because protection and affection for the cows and for the Brahmins is what's ultimately best for the Dharma and for the spiritual upliftment of human society. So she got a pure-hearted Brahmin. And she knew, because Krishna honors the Brahmin so much, he could cross through all the security and go right into Krishna's inner sanctum with a message. A minister couldn't do that. A soldier couldn't do that. A courier couldn't do that. Only a Brahmin, only a devotee who loves Krishna and who Krishna loves could do it. So this Brahmin, she was weeping, she was crying, she gave this message to him and said, please deliver it immediately. Now, in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a beautiful reenactment of this story by Lord Chaitanya. May I tell? Should I continue? Then you have to wait about 3 minutes and I'll be back. You could all stand up and have kirtan for about 3-4 minutes. Kumar. So the devotees were extremely excited to see this dance. And they were so happy. And Lord Chaitanya was telling about how this dance was going to be. And the devotees were becoming more and more blissful. What we will see, what we will experience. And then Lord Chaitanya said, but no one is allowed to enter if they have any single trace of material desires. So then the devotees became very discouraged. Advaitacharya, the greatest of the devotees, he drew a line with his toe in the earth, which was like a border, and he was on one side. And Advaita started to cry. He said, that means I will not be able to cross this line. I will not be able to enter because I have so many material desires. And Srivas, he said, even I can't enter because I have so many material desires. And everyone was expressing the same thing. This is the nature of great people. On the path of bhakti, the true qualification for seeing God is our humility. And part of humility, we don't think we're above Maya. Krishna's above Maya. Only if we take shelter of Krishna can we be protected.
So they all claimed their disqualification to come. And Lord Chaitanya left. He said, "Today by my powers you will all be the greatest of all yogis without any material desires." So even on that level, they're depending on God's grace for their qualification. Devotees never think anything is based on their own qualifications. So Lord Chaitanya explained that I will be Gopi, and Nityananda will be my grandmother. And Srivas Thakur will be Narada Muni. And Haridas Thakur will be the guard who keeps everyone awake. Because this dance was going to go on all night long. So they all assembled, Vishnupriya, Lord Chaitanya's wife, and Sachi Devi, Lord Chaitanya's mother, they all assembled at the house of Chandrasekhar. Chandrasekhar was married to Sachi Devi's, Sachi Mata's sister. So he was Lord Chaitanya's maternal uncle. So they approached. And Haridas Thakur came out, and he was dressed up in a certain way. It was actually going to be a drama. It was a drama festival. And they were all made up in certain ways and dressed in certain ways as an expression of their devotion in a very genuine way. So Haridas Thakur came out with a stick to make sure everyone was awake. Now, how could anyone go to sleep in a situation like that? But still, he was waking up, making sure everyone was awake. And then Srivas came out as Narada Muni, and he was announcing what was going to happen. And Sachi Devi turned to Malini, who was Srivas's wife, and asked, "Who is that?" And Malini said, "That's my husband, Srivas." And Sachi Devi, and she was so, she fell unconscious. She just couldn't believe how expertly choreographed and organized this drama festival really was. And meanwhile, Lord Chaitanya, as he was just arranging to come out in front of all the devotees, he totally entered into the mood of Rukmini at the time of her most profound desperation. Because actually Lord Chaitanya is Radha Bhava Duti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam. Krishna with the love of Radha in his heart, which includes the love of Rukmini. So Lord Chaitanya was Rukmini in his heart. And her love, in the exact same way that Rukmini was feeling in Dwarka, Lord Chaitanya, in her, dressed as Rukmini, in his heart he was feeling the same way. And right in front of everybody, and he was no longer just a drama, he wasn't performing, they were just watching the transformation of his consciousness, revealing the deepest, most esoteric love. Lord Chaitanya wrote the letter that Rukmini wrote and gave to the Brahman. But how did Lord Chaitanya write this letter? The ink was the incessant tears flowing from his eyes. The paper was the earth. The pen was his finger. Tears were falling on the earth, and with the water that was on the earth, with the pen, he was writing the verses that we find in this 52nd chapter
of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then in great love, Lord Chaitanya was reciting in the spirit of Rukmini these beautiful prayers. May I read to you the prayers? First of all, Lord Chaitanya, he was with such love and separation speaking, and everyone in the assembly, their hearts were completely transformed, crying and crying and crying, feeling one with the feelings of Lord Chaitanya. And then after reciting these prayers, Lord Chaitanya, he told the Brahmin, who was being played by another devotee, go and bring this to Krishna now. These are the prayers that Rukmini wrote. The Brahmin arrived in Dwarka. He was immediately escorted right to Krishna's personal rooms, where Krishna was sitting on a beautiful seat. And Krishna got off the seat because he loves his devotees. He worships his devotees. With all humility, Krishna washed the feet of the Brahmin. Then he gave him a nice seat, and Krishna personally arranged and served him wonderful prasad, a wonderful meal. And Krishna gave him a nice, beautiful place to rest. And then Krishna, while massaging the feet of the Brahmin, he said, "O Brahmin, I repeatedly bow my head in respect to those Brahmins who are satisfied with their lot. Saintly, prideless, and peaceful, they are the best well-wishers of all living beings." In other words, if one is self-satisfied, one can truly be compassionate toward others. As long as one has egoistic or selfish desires, there's a great limit to what compassion we can actually express to others. Therefore, for a devotee, if we really care about how others are suffering, then we become so determined. We feel such a necessity to cleanse our own hearts so that we can actually be instruments to help. Otherwise, if we're just part of the problem, how much can we actually help others? So seeing the suffering of humanity, seeing the suffering of animals, seeing the sufferings of the ecology, seeing the sufferings in this world, if we actually care, it should be an impetus for great eagerness and determination to perform our sadhana, to seek out saintly association, to do our spiritual practice, and to actually be a suitable instrument of God's compassion. Krishna asks, "O Brahmin, is your king attending to your welfare? Indeed, that king whose country the citizens are happy and protected is very dear to me. Whence have you come, crossing the impassable sea, and for what purpose? Explain all of this to us, if it is not a secret, and tell us what we may do for you." Krishna recognized that this Brahman, he had a message. And how deeply he cared for Rukmini. You know, in the... How did he cross the sea? Even Krishna's asking him this question. In the same day, this Brahman traveled hundreds and hundreds of miles and crossed the sea and crossed through all the security and was in Krishna's room. And Krishna's asking him, how did you do this and why? Thus questioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who incarnates to perform his pastimes, the Brahman told him everything. And the Brahman, he had an envelope that was sealed with a royal seal. It was sealed by Rukmini, so no one but Krishna would ever see it. And he broke the seal. And with Krishna's permission, he read the letter of Rukmini. After the Govardhan Leela, Indra felt, how can I approach Krishna after all the trouble I caused him? He approached Brihaspati. Brihaspati said, how could you approach Krishna after all the trouble you caused? Brihaspati says, Guru. He said, you should go to Brahma. Brahma, he said, if you want to get a message to Krishna, you have to, that message has to be delivered through somebody who loves Krishna. So go to Surabhi, the cow, because Krishna loves cows. The mother of the cows. If she appeals on your behalf, Krishna will listen and take it very seriously. So in a similar way, Rukmini understood that just like Krishna loves the cows, Surabhi, she loves the Brahmins. And she was in a very humble state. She was feeling, I'm not worthy of Krishna. But still I've given my heart and my life to him. So her surrender was through the Brahman, one who loves Krishna. And if this Brahman repeats my message to Krishna, Krishna will receive it. So Krishna asks the Brahman to read it. And here is the letter. Sri Rukmini said, O beauty of the worlds, having heard of your qualities which enter the ears of those who hear and remove their bodily distress, and having also heard of your beauty which fulfills all the visual desires of those who see, I have fixed my shameless mind upon you, O Krishna. She's glorifying Krishna and expressing the genuine humility of how undeserving she is. In spiritual matters, if we feel, as our Yamuna Devi used to say, entitled, if we feel we deserve, that's actually our disqualification for actual spiritual connection. Rukmini, who really deserves, who's really entitled, she's considering she doesn't deserve. And she's considering herself shameless for even asking. That is the qualification of a truly enlightened being. Haridas Thakur. Just yesterday in Puri, I was chanting japa at Siddha Bakula. just about 26 hours ago I was there. And Thakur Haridas, when he was offered any benediction, Haridas Thakur said that actually I'm the least among your devotees. He said, just always give me the food that has fallen from the mouth of your devotee and that they throw out on their plates. Let me be even a dog or insect near their house so I can eat that food. That's the only thing I want. And then Haridas expressed how shameless he was for asking for such an exalted benediction. I don't deserve such a thing as that. Shameless as I am, I'm asking. And at Siddha Bakula itself, when Lord Chaitanya came to Haridas, Haridas expressed to Lord Chaitanya that I'm untouchable, I'm unseeable, I'm the lowest and worst among people. Now you may think this is something psychotic. This is love. This is the heart. This is not causing depression, it's causing ecstatic love. Because when you understand the greatness of who Krishna is and the greatness of what the treasure, the prem nidhi, the treasure of love actually is, then we feel so small and undeserving. If we feel deserving of it, that means we really don't understand what it is. It's a prema bhakti is a shoreless ocean. Of happiness. It's the highest thing. If we understand the gravity of what love of God is and who Krishna is, then we feel completely undeserving. And we just cry out like Rukmini is crying out. I just want to love you. I want to serve you as shameless as I am. That is how we actually invoke grace, through that type of humility. And that's actually an appreciation of the value of something. If we think that because I've done this or because I've done this or that, I deserve, that means we really don't understand the value of what bhakti is about. You can't ever deserve it. It's given to a humble heart. That dedicates its all in all to receive it. O Mukunda, Rukmini continues, O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. O lion among men, you delight the minds of all mankind. What aristocratic, sober-minded, and marriageable girl of a good family would not choose you as her husband when the proper time has come? Therefore, my dear Lord, I have chosen you as my husband. This is very interesting, because she's not saying, I've chosen you as my husband because of my greatness, because of my enlightened state. I've chosen you as my husband because of your greatness. How could I resist? How could anyone resist? And it's true. Krishna's the husband of every living being. We're all prakriti. We're all meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. So she's just being honest. Who, where could anyone resist you, Krishna? That's the reality. It's just the ego. The ego that comes between us and our real desires, our real needs, our real love. But Rukmini is speaking with such a humble heart that whatever love she has for Krishna, she's giving all credit to Krishna. It's because of your glory and your beauty and your greatness. Therefore, my dear Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. Please come swiftly, O Almighty One, and make me your wife. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, let Shishupal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal stealing the property of a lion. Since I will be staying... Now, Rukmini is very intelligent. She's not only expressing her wish, but she's being very practical. Bhakti is very practical. Prabhupada explained to us through his life, through his teachings, that to cultivate that inner bhava, that inner devotion through our sadhana is very important. It's the essence. But at the same time, we have to be very practical in how we execute our devotional service. So she's telling Krishna the way in which he could steal her. Since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. Would you like to hear? On the day before the marriage, there is a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity. And in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to visit Goddess Gidija. O lotus-eyed one, great souls like Lord Shiva hanker to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet and thereby destroy their ignorance. If I cannot obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up my vital force, which will have become weak from the severe penance I will perform. Then after hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy. So Rukmini, in this final verse that Lord Chaitanya wrote, with the ink of his tears on the paper of the earth and with the pen of his finger, is concluding by her humbling herself to understand the value of service to Krishna with love. If you do not accept me, I will just do penances for this purpose, for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, so that I could obtain your mercy. When we call it mercy, that means it's coming The only qualification is the higher power that's giving the mercy. The qualification is not ourselves. That's what mercy means. And that brings us to today's verse.
Brahman said, "This is the confidential message I have brought with you, O Lord of the Isles. Please consider what must be done in these circumstances and do it at once." In front of all of you, I declare this vow. Even if Ravana, who has done every type of horrible, terrible deed, who's even stolen my wife and torture, even if he comes to me and wants to be sincere and accept my love, I will give him compassion. I will give him myself forever. Bring it. I will hear all mercy. I will immediately bring it. And the patience that I have for you. And I will do it. And I will do it. And I will do it.
Thank you.